Yo, this is Erupt.
Yo, this is Napalm Death.
Salut, c'est Hirokos.
Hallo, ich bin Ferex.
Hi, this is Adrenaline.
Moin, man, Ricky Martin.
Atem azenim.
Moin, tasta, yo best.
Ciao, sono D-Brain, stai ascoltando The Arts.
Merhabalar, ben Cubone, ben Sichuan, The Arts dinliyorsunuz.
Les habla el hacker uruguayo, están escuchando The Arts.
This is Rambo.
This is Joel.
This is Subliminal.
This is the text mode exorcist.
Det här är Psyched.
Ja, det här är Barium.
This is Pinguino.
This is Cavalier.
And you're listening to The Arts.
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 You're listening to Arts Radio.
Scene Radio Talk Show.
Welcome to episode 6 of the Arts, the Art Scene Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, Radman.
And this is Spin Sane.
Today's date is Sunday, July 11th, 2004. For those of you who are joining us for the very first time, the Arts is a variety talk show dedicated to the scene, including graphics, demos, tracking, and all things in between.
That's right. It's about time we do a real show again. I mean, no. I'm sober this time.
This program, we have quite an exciting lineup of guests, including DOJ, member of Farbrausch and Cubic, who will be speaking on the history of Farbrausch and the diverse background of its members. We'll also be speaking later with Abyss, Future Crew alumnus and assembly organizer. He'll be providing us with insight into what's in store for Assembly 2004.
Sweet.
And, of course, other current events, but first we have...
You've got mail.
First, we have an email from the Russian scene artist Lord Maxtro.
He writes, "Hi there. Listened to the fifth episode of The Arts yesterday, and I'd like to say I'm impressed. I didn't listen to it before due to my bad dial-up connection, but yesterday decided to download at least the latest episode, and it's damn worth it. I was happy as a little kid playing with his new toy. I really enjoyed your conversation style, and somehow I understood pretty much." And then he goes on to write, "My overall rating is 99% out of 100. And then he also says, "Keep your really good job." I'm also going to keep up doing a really good job, but also try to stay employed as well.
Next, we have an email from Trickster, producer of the Mind Candy DVD and Hornet member. He wrote in to say that he wanted to let us know that he thinks we're doing a fine job with all of our scene-related projects, especially the radio show, and that we have a good grasp of the basics of each scene we cover, and that the shows are never boring. Keep up the good work. That's from Trickster.
That's high praise coming from him because he knows his shit in the demo scene.
Absolutely. So, yes, we definitely appreciate the positive feedback. We've also received several emails from people asking us to cover the net label scene, so I just want to let everybody know that's written in to request that we hear you. We do have several different people lined up for interviews. If you have somebody specific that you think is an expert on the subject of net labels, you can definitely send us an email on that, and we'll do our best to have them as a guest on our show in the future. If you'd like to email us, we can be reached at radio@ass.org. Please specify how to properly pronounce your name or alias in the event that we select your message for the next episode of The Arts.
We also want hate mail, too.
Yes.
Porn passwords are cool.
We have DOJ literally waiting for us to be added onto the show.
All right.
Without further ado, we're going to go live with Farbrausch member DOJ.
Word.
Okay, we're now speaking with DOJ, who was once organizer of the Mecha Symposium and then later the Breakpoint demo parties. He's also been a member of such very fine demo groups as Cubic, Elite Group, and now Farbrausch.
Yeah, hello.
Now, we've been speaking a lot about the history of Farbrausch, and that's something that is of great interest to me. There seems to be some really strong ties between 1998 and 1999's Elite Group and Farbrausch.
Yes, that's more or less correct. Many members of former Elite Group are now active or more or less inactive in Farbrausch. Actually, that wasn't intended. As you may know, the Elite group was more of a concept group that was meant to exist for roughly 1 year, and after it diminished in the end of 1999, the people who still liked to carry on with making demos, they of course needed a new group to join. And due to some, well, funny instances, many then went to Fabros.
One of the things that I find kind of, I guess, humorous or interesting about Elite Group is that all of the people that joined it, they joined with pseudonyms. So they had handles
yeah,
on top of their
right.
handles.
Yeah. Well, in fact, there were many internal rules of Elite Group because Elite Group really was a mock-up of all this group thing in the demo scene. And, for example, normally every group has more or less a leader. Every group needs a leader in some way. A mock-up of this in Elite Group was, for example, that Elite Group had a leader of the month, who was just the leader for 1 month, who was elected by the previous leader of the month, and he had to accomplish certain goals that were met in the monthly plan for accomplishing world domination, of course. And another rule was that the leader of the month had to kick a member every month. So no matter how well you did in producing demos, one member had to be kicked because that was part of the rules. But of course, this member could join again under a new name on the same day he was kicked. And the names of members of the Elite Group, it was more or less in the same concept. So you must not use your real or old name. You have to invent a new name, and this name has to be completely over the top. So it all fits into this arrogant, dominant Elite Group concept.
What are some of the names that you went by?
Well, I've been in Elite Group as MC Department of Justice, and later on Dr. Detroit.
Excellent.
The Department of Justice was a dead giveaway.
Yeah, MC Department of Justice was kicked.
Now, when Elite Group was formed, and correct me if I'm wrong, when they were formed, they kind of established themselves at the party in 1998.
Yes, I think they were formed a few weeks before in December or in the end of November. The founders of Elite Group met in Germany in the end of November, and they discussed that they more or less had won every major competition of the party, which is or was a very famous and big demo party in Denmark in December. And they found out that they more or less won every major competition at the party in the years before 1999. And then they made the plan that it should be possible to win every major competition. That means all the demo competition, the 64K intro competition, the wild competition, and the music competition at the party, and to announce this goal 1 year before. That's why Elite Group was founded. And that's why, from the beginning, it was clear that Elite Group only existed for 1 year. They just wanted to try to reach this goal. And then they announced at the party in 1998, they announced that they are Elite Group, the new Elite demo group, and they will try to accomplish world domination. And to prove that they are really the most dominant demo group in the world, they will win every major competition at the party 1999.
So Elite Group was basically then the culmination of several different major successful demo groups under fictitious names. Prior to this, all of these people were all in their own individual groups, and they banded together, hell-bent on dominating the entire demo scene at the party 99.
Yes, that was the plan.
And so this didn't pan out quite exactly as everybody had intended.
No, partly it was our fault, for example, and partly it was the fault of the organizers of the party. For example, the coder, who was called Power in the Elite Group, in the real life he was known as Chaos from Sanity, the famous Amiga coder. And he was working on an Amiga demo for a classic Amiga, like an Amiga 4000. And then in November 1999, the organizers of the party changed the Amiga competition rules, and now the Amiga competition was held on the new PowerPC Amigas. So as Chaos he doesn't own such an Amiga, he doesn't really know what can be done there, And in fact, it's those PowerPC Amigas are more or less like a slow PC. Then we had to cancel all our Amiga contributions.
And things pretty much fell apart from there.
And then of course, the goal couldn't be met anymore. And our planned 64K intro was in fact technically too advanced. Our ideas were too advanced for the time. We needed another year to finish it. And then the guys who wanted to make the Commodore 64 demos, well, we said, okay, well, we can't accomplish our goal with Elite Group anymore. So they decided to release it under their real name. And then what had been left of Elite Group was only the PC demo, which is Kasparov, and it won, and the Wild demo, which was named Pavlov, and it only turned out to be second. And the famous South Party demo from Hybris Nemesis.
Right, it was second to South Party.
Yes.
So, which was also very great. I mean,
that's no shame.
Yes.
Losing when you lose against South Party.
One of the other things that I find very interesting, or I guess one of the things that's almost ironic, is that a lot of the members of Elite Group had later transitioned over to kind of join or form what is now known as Farbrausch.
Yes.
And what's the irony in that is that the irony in it is that Elite Group, which was this group poking fun at the scene and trying to, you know, dominate everything and be really militant about it, and then you have Farbrausch, which is a real group and in some ways is achieving some of the goals that Elite Group set out to do. I mean,
yeah, I understand. Well, the thing is that even when Elite Group was formed, and as you said, the members of Elite Group had all been members of famous demo groups before of various platforms, but as always, groups are formed, groups have their active time, and then the members of the groups go their own way, and then most of the groups fall apart. And for, I think, every member in Elite Group, this was the case at the end of the 90s. For example, my former group, Cubic, had its last major release in 1997. And, for example, Sanity, the Amiga demo group, the famous Amiga demo group, had its last major release in 1995. So, in fact, Elite Group was before a melting pot of people who wanted to stay active in the scene, but who couldn't do it alone with the old groups anymore. And then this concept of a one-year group, of course, was appealing to many. And after Elite Group then diminished again, they just had to find a new group. In fact, Farbrausch had been founded by three members, by Yoda, KB, and Ronnie, because of the very same reasons, because they just wanted to unite and to form a new group. And then during the year 2000, most of the members from Elite Group who wanted to stay active in the scene again, they just joined Farbrausch because the group was already there. It had made some releases, and we knew all the others, and most of the people live in northern Germany. They are friends, or even they work together. So it was the easiest way to do it.
Farbrausch has been stirring up much controversy lately in the scene, Poet bulletin boards and such, and they've also been receiving a lot of coverage from the internet media, such as Tom's Hardware and Slashdot. They've received a front page posting on Slashdot regarding their newly released demo tool, their demo design tool, Werkzeug, and I've read many different translations of what this tool would translate to be in English, such as work things or mechanical tool. In English, what would you translate that to mean? And can you tell us about the program and why Farbrausch has opted to release it to the public?
Yeah, okay. The program is named after the German name for tool, Werkzeug. And actually, it's the second generation of this type of program, which Chaos had written. The first was called Generator. Generator was used in the Farbrausch demo, The Product, which, you know, it has number 8, FR08, The Product. And the evolution of this program comes from our member Fiverr 2, which worked also on the Elite Group demo Kasparov. And in fact, Kasparov is a typical 3D demo, where the 3D model was made with soft image and the textures were made with Photoshop. And then Fiverr, he more or less complained that while he wanted to create a 3D world, he always had to switch between two programs. He had to paint his textures in Photoshop, then he had to switch over to soft image and apply the textures, apply the mapping, and so on. The second thing he complained or noticed that even though, for example, he worked on textures, he more or less created them from scratch, and he always did more or less the same steps. So, for example, when he wanted to make a texture for a bricked wall, he always had to create the brick structure, then he had to create some bump maps, and in the end, he applied a different colors to all his basically the same texture. So he had a brown brick wall, a light brown brick wall, a red brick wall, a yellow brick wall, and then he discussed with Chaos that if he had a more, let's say, intelligent program, that would at first ease him with creation of 3D models and textures, and in fact could be used in demos more efficiently because you don't need to store so much data. And then in 2000, I think in summer 2000, Chaos started to working on a program to try out these ideas. So the first versions of Generator, they only could generate textures, and they were performing quite well. And the trick is that you don't store the individual pixels of all your textures, but you just store the way you apply different depths on your texture.
What did you think about the fact that when Verkzoid came out and it received the slash dotting, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but the Farbrush 25, the popular demo, received well over 10,000 downloads in a single day.
Yeah, we know. Well, I think if you look at the download statistics at zine.org,
yes,
which is the major FTP server for demo scene stuff, I think the popular demo has become the most downloaded demo of all times.
It has a 99% rating on Puet. You know, I'm not sure what figures in to make it the 99%, but it is by far the most popular demo. I mean, true to its name.
Yeah. Okay, it's a nice thing.
Yeah. Another question I had, getting back to translations and the appropriate pronunciations, I mean, we're constantly butchering not only our own language, but other languages as well. But the word Farbrush, in English, I understand that this translates roughly into color intoxication.
Yeah, it's literally the correct translation, and I think the intention of the name is like you're stoned by flashing colors.
Okay.
So if you watch a demo and you don't watch those dark gothic or ambient style demos, but you watch the colorful demos, and then you're in a sort of stoned. Then you're stoned by. You should be stoned by watching a Farbrush demo. That's what the name wants to intend.
We've mentioned several other groups that have eventually later formed into Farbrush, some of them being, I mean, there are many, many groups from many different scenes, such as the Acorn scene, the Atari scene, the Commodore 64, and Amiga. But some of the groups that we've mentioned, such as Cubic, has a website at www.cubic.org. Elite Group has a site.
Elitegroup.demo.org.
Yes. Elitegroup.demo.org. And Farbrush has a good number of different sites. What is the preferred default site for people who want to get more information on Farbrush?
Oh, yes, that's a bit complicated. Well, the main sites are farb-rausch.com, and there is a German site at farb-rausch.de. And then Chaos made his own site where he explains the demos he was involved in, like the product and the popular demo. And this site is called theproduct.com. So in fact, the demo group Farbrush has multiple sites. It's just that multiple people maintain these sites, and that these sites concentrate on various topics.
Okay, well, that's all the questions I have, DOJ. I just wanted to thank you very much for taking time out to be a part of the show. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pleasure for me to answer all your questions, and it was an even greater pleasure to listen to all your past shows, and I'm very looking forward for more episodes of The Arts. And, well, I wish you a very, very comfortable and exciting time when you visit Assembly.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, I'm going to be there. And
I've been there numerous times in the 90s. I read your post in the news group. But be prepared that at Assembly, all real sceners, that is mostly the Scandinavian guys, they don't go to Assembly, they only go to Booth Assembly.
Yeah.
So most of the people who you find inside are what sceners would call the lamers, and the sceners you will find drunken outside, and they just make a big Booth Assembly.
What about the non-alcoholic sceners?
Okay, well, I haven't been to Assembly since they made this old school, new school, gamer-lama separation. I don't know how it's doing now, but even the real sceners who don't drink alcohol, they are on the Booth Assembly as well, because all their mates are there. You can go inside, watch the competitions and stuff. But if you want to meet the real European sceners, you have to show up at Booth Assembly.
I just recently, last week, I just placed an order for 10 bags of the Finnish candy Turkish peppers.
Yeah.
So very shortly, I'll be concocting my own home-brewed salmiakki here. So I'll be ready when I arrive to Finland. Well, thank you again very much, DOJ, for being a part of the show.
Yeah.
It was great having you on.
Yeah, thanks a lot, DOJ, and Peter Zane.
Okay, well, okay, then have a fine day, Spin Dan and Redman.
Take care.
Later.
So that was DOJ speaking on the beginnings of Farbrush and their tie-in to Elite Group and other groups.
DOJ, a.k.a. Dr. Detroit,
yes.
A.k.a. MC, Department of Justice. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. You gotta love groups based around the idea of having multiple pseudonyms and kicking members out every month.
You know, it was kind of funny. I didn't bring it up while in conversation, but a lot of the ways that Elite Group was organized, how it was a for fun type of demo group, it really reminded me a lot of MOP. You know, how they had to kick out a member every month, whereas in MOP they had to, the tie-in to MOP was that in MOP they had a different acronym every month. So MOP stood for, you know, it had a different meaning every month.
That you're talking about the old anti group, right?
Yes, the old art scene group.
Monkeys on Porches. Yeah, I was noticing, like, there's a lot of parallels between a lot of different scenes, like all the underground computer art scenes and how Elite Group was formed and how Farbrush was formed. That just seems like the way it goes. Like, every once in a while, a super group seems to form, you know, and all the members of the other groups will join it for a little while and it will die and everyone will just move on. It's just the way it goes.
Life.
Pretty interesting, pretty interesting. Parallels art. Something.
I just now received an email from Abyss. He's awaiting our call, so I thought we'd go ahead and just jump right into that.
All right.
All right, here goes. Moi, ja terve tulla art scene.
Thank you very much.
We're now speaking with Abyss. He is a longtime scener. He's a Future Crew alumnus and current organizer of the Assembly Demo Party in Finland, one of the largest demo parties in the world. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be interviewed for this show.
Assembly it's coming up quickly. Assembly is 1 month away now. What's in store?
Well, the party is now held for the 13th time, and even though after many years we already have a pretty good grasp on what to do each year, still seems to come up, sneak up on you. This year, some of the key things we're doing is actually the seminars. Artex seminars this year have a really nice setup, especially for the demo scene. We have a track called the Killer 64K intros, and we have some of the authors of the best-known 64K intros around telling people about how they make their intros. On the competition side, there has been some natural renewals in there, change the categories a little bit, but nothing too spectacular kind of changes in there. So we are expecting to people to look at what we have done previously and expect a quality party, which we're going to be throwing once again, and coming to see some great competitions and hearing from the people who also participate in these competitions in the seminars to talk about their way of doing intros and programming and doing graphics. So we hope to see the kind of both the competition side and the seminar side sort of emerge and see the whole picture come to from that.
I've heard that you have some pretty exciting speakers and seminars lined up. Who's your keynote speaker this year?
Our keynote speaker is Mr. David Fox, who was the number two employee at LucasArts. So he was hired as the second employee into the company in 1982 or 3, if I remember correctly. He has been working on such legendary titles as Jack McCracken, Rescue on Fractalus, and other really, really legendary titles. So it will be really a privilege to hear from such an industry figure how was the business like back then, and what was the inspiration for these legendary games.
That sounds great. Zach McCracken, that's a classic.
Yeah, we're hoping to see perhaps some footage even on that. I think he had some video material from Rescue and Fractalus on Atari 2600, so that'll be interesting to see what he'll be able to show us.
Very cool.
As far as the special events, Assembly is not your ordinary demo party. It's quite huge. I mean, as I understand, the attendance is in numbers as high as 5,000 or 6,000. What was last year's attendance?
Calculating all the visitors, including the one-day pass visitors, we had about 5,400 visitors. Of these, you have roughly 3,500 which come to the party and stay for the whole event with their computers, and then you have around 1,500 who also stay for the whole duration of the event. So I would say about 4,500 to 5,000 other visitors who stay for the whole duration of 4 days.
Assembly has been around for, as you said, what, 13 years?
Yes, the first party was held in 1992.
Now, I mean, they have a lot of traditional... Assembly has a lot of traditional demo competitions and such. What are some of the unique competitions that Assembly has to offer that sets it apart and distinguishes it from other demo parties that people may be going to?
I'd say there are a lot of sort of a mainstay competitions that just have to be in a demo party. Even in there, Assembly has been, let's say, sort of an innovator in the sense that we have made changes that then have propagated through the demo scene into other parties, like combining the platforms into one competition in the demo competition. From the unique side, one of the new competitions this year is called the Short Film Competition, which is a sort of a combination of the animation and a sort of a cinematic home cinema sort of competition. So we're expecting to see sort of a merging of CGI and more traditional video-based storytelling in there.
I know that, like, The Gathering has a Dance Dance Revolution competition and other kind of fun, you know, not really demo-related competitions. Does Assembly offer anything like that that's not really necessarily demo-related but kind of fun to compete in, such as outdoor competitions or sporting-based type of competitions?
You naturally need to have some competitions and other programs to rewind and relax from just sitting in front of the computer. One of the traditional ones we have is the CD and disc throwing competitions. Those have been around since the beginning of Assembly. Well, not for the CD because that's a newer medium, but the floppy disc throwing competition has been around, and the record for that, I think, was set in 95, and it's 69 meters. Other things we do, we have a soccer competition, we have a street basketball, we have also the Dance Dance Revolution. And then there are a number of nice things going on, sort of events you can participate in. There's a techno party in 3 nights in a row, and we have a sort of a robot war kind of thing going on. So there's about 20 self-assembled robots taking or battling it out on an arena,
right.
Sort of an amateur sport here in the film starting to take off. Pretty much there's a lot of things going on. There's actually that's in the TV, which our TV channel that hosts a couple of live concerts in there, and so a number of things.
We used to have something similar to the robot battling that you referred to is called BattleBots, and it was on Comedy Central, and then prior to that it was on a public television stations and such. So that's pretty interesting to hear that Assembly has something similar to that as well.
I'm interested in the you said there's a CD tossing contest, and 96 meters is the record.
Is the record is actually 96 meters is for a floppy disk, a 3.5-inch floppy. And there was actually, there used to be a very, very weird rule that you had to have, for the official throwing media, you had to have one particular demo on it. Actually, I have forgotten what the demo was, but still, that was the going back in 96, and we still do that. And we, actually, nobody has been able to break the record of 96 meters.
Sounds like it could be an Olympic event in 2004.
Sort of, yeah. So, actually, that probably was a freak occurrence, because this typically doesn't fly more than 40 or 60 meters. Probably got those wind or something involved.
You've probably experienced a lot over the past 13 years organizing this party. What are some of the more memorable experiences that you have taken away from Assembly every year?
Well, there are a lot of things over the years. Naturally, you need to remember the first years very fondly, because it was so underground, it was so new and everything was fresh, and naturally you yourself, you were quite young. On the recent history, one of the greatest things was when there was one of the co-authors of the Amiga computer was speaking in the seminars, and then a number of guys made a tribute to Amiga called Lapsus, or in English, Childhood. So their childhood was on Amiga, and that won all the PC-based demos, and then the co-author of the Amiga computer was there to hand out the trophy to these five guys who were so influenced by the Amiga. So that was sort of a really spectacular moment for me.
What is the history? I've heard so much about Boozembly at Assembly, which, from what I understand, it takes part across the street in a wooded area near the Hartwell Arena. What is the relationship between Boozembly and Assembly? When did it form, and so on?
Well, if you take a number of young males in the age of 18 and they want to have a good time, it typically involves some amount of alcohol, so I think that's the origin. I think the earliest Boozemblies were held in 95 or 96, when we still used to be in a different location, but the same concept holds true today. So there's no organizing, there's basically disorganizing involved. Just people gather around, hang around, enjoy the fun, and have a couple of ones and just talk and mix and mingle. So Boozembly is not organized by Assembly, it's disorganized by everybody who goes there, and it's just sort of a ad hoc gathering of people to have a couple of ones. This naturally occurs because Assembly by itself is an alcohol-free party, so people need to go outside to have a beer.
So it's basically an informal gathering of people just sharing a few beers and socializing and such. Do actual Assembly organizers and what have you visit and mingle with the folks at Boozembly just to see who's there and what have you?
As much as we have a possibility to do, we naturally, because there we all have to take some responsibility for that, because it's in the near surroundings. So actually, our security keeps a sort of a friendly eye over that. So just in case somebody gets too carried away with the booze. And every year I make a point, and there are quite a few other organizers also make a point to go there and spend some time in there, because it's just so much fun. But still, the main responsibility for us is to organize the party, which means that there's rarely a lot of time to just sit around and have a pint and talk to people. So it's unfortunately, when it's party time for everybody else, it's work time for us.
Another statistic that I found very noteworthy about Assembly is that they have a humongous organizing crew. It was somewhere in the range of hundreds.
It's true. The whole crew, if you calculate the extra security, which is not basically organizers, but people who you hire, totals in around 220 or 30.
Wow.
And basically that's divided into the biggest teams are our TV team. We have a 24-hour broadcast over both actually Finland's terrestrial digital TV, cable TV, and the webcast. That's about 65 persons. Then your net crew is about 50 persons. Compo team is about 20 people. Info desk, 25. It soon actually starts to pile up, so you would end up with over 200 people.
Going back to the competitions. I know that there's a lot of the standard fare, a lot of the standard demo competitions. Assembly also makes it possible for somebody to host their own competition as an unofficial compo at Assembly. What are some of the unofficial compos that will be taking place this year?
Well, this year we have two competitions currently announced, the unofficial ones, that is. One is called the Old School Animation Competition. It's basically frame-based animation, so you submit the number of frames up to, I think, 5,000 frames, which should be hand-drawn, and those are then shown in sequence. Then there is the ASCII and ANSI text mode graphics competition, which is also an interesting competition. We had actually an official ASCII and ANSI competition, I think, 3 years ago, but we unfortunately had only 5 entries, so it didn't really fly. It's still sort of an underground thing.
I would imagine that a lot of the visitors at Assembly are from other countries. Do you keep tabs on where people are coming from? For example, how many people would you say annually come from the United States or, you know, outside of Finland?
Well, we naturally have a registration system, so we hope all the everybody registers. That's also required to be able to vote. And based on that data, we have around, typically per year, it's about 400 to 500 visitors from outside of Finland, which would translate to about 10% of the whole attendance. Of that, we have majority of that actually comes from Europe, but we have had people actually from the States, from faraway places like Brazil, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, and, well, so far nobody from the Antarctica, but typically from the United States, I think we have had about a couple of persons per year. The distance is actually quite great, so, and it costs quite a lot to come to Finland, so it's not that many people who can make the trip.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like the party is a lot of fun. It sounds like there's definitely more stuff to do than most people can probably handle. So
that's true. There are quite a few people complaining that I couldn't make everything that you had in store, and I wanted to watch a seminar, but there was a competition going on. So actually, it sort of has grown beyond just being a demo party. We typically even call it a festival because there's so many things that are more appropriate to a festival than for a traditional demo party. But definitely, the demo party is what we want to throw, but we just want to make it the big one.
Right.
Exactly. So for those who are interested or want more information, Assembly takes place on August 5th through 8th in Helsinki, Finland at the Hartwell Arena. And if you want more information, you can go to their website at assembly.org. Abyss, thank you very much for being a part of this show. We've learned a lot here, and is there anything else that you wanted to share?
Well, just if you can't make it to Assembly, watch Assembly TV. That's on www.assemblytv.net, and we'll be broadcasting throughout the event, and you'll be able to enjoy the party firsthand on your own computer.
Very good. Okay, well, thank you very much, Abyss.
Hope it's a big success.
Thanks for having me.
Later. And that was Abyss talking about the Assembly demo party, which is coming up in a month, and sounds like there's a lot of interesting stuff for people interested in the scene to check out there. I guess it's like the super party.
Right. It's basically, as I've said before, it's the spectacle of the demo scene. It's pretty much one of the largest events that happen. Granted, it may not be a 100% pure demo scene or attended party. It's one of the longest, you know, running parties in the scene, and it's still a great party.
Yeah, it was pretty cool how they were talking about how they have Assembly TV.
Right. During the time that the party takes place, they have what's called Assembly TV. So for those who, you know, can't be there in person, they can actually watch a webcast of what's happening there.
So, right.
Yeah, that was that. I guess we should move over to current events now, since this is already turning out to be a double episode.
Yeah, we're going to have to split it up into two parts.
Yeah, we'll just take a one-month vacation. I was planning on doing that anyways.
Right, me too.
Demo Vibes 3. Wilby has recently completed the trilogy that is Demo Vibes. So we've spoken before about Demo Vibes 1 and Demo Vibes 2. If you enjoyed those, 3 is already out. You can pick it up on Wilby's site at Planet D, wilby.planet-d.net, and click on Goodies.
Yeah, Demo Vibes, speaking of which, is really cool. Like, I know we've spoken about it before. It's doing a lot of good for the demo scene. I've told a lot of my non-scene friends about it, and they're actually listening to it and enjoying it. So it's pretty interesting, and it was a nice project to him to put out to get more people interested in demo music.
Yes. Bob Beamer, on a slightly more tragic note. Bob Beamer, the father of ASCII, died last month. Bob Beamer was referred to as the father of ASCII. He was a major contributor to several major standard protocols, including ASCII. He helped create and standardize the ASCII character set. He is accredited with inventing the escape sequence, and he also is credited with putting several of the characters in the ASCII character set, such as the backslash. And
yeah,
these are
the backslash is my favorite character, too. So the whole old-school ASCII scene owes a lot to this man.
Yes. Fortunately, he was alive for many years. I believe he was somewhere in his 80s when he passed away, so it sounds like he led a pretty full life. So, yeah, and still, he does need to be recognized.
True.
Also, this is really huge news. There's been a Demoscene book published. Have you heard about that?
Yeah. Demoscene, the art of real time.
Yes. Rarer and others have published a book, like you said, Demoscene, the art of real time. It's a 72-page full-color book. It's a conversational coffee table styled book. So it's, you know, light on the maybe textual content and heavy on the graphics and pictures, something that you could lay on the coffee table and share with friends. And it's a good way, I think, to introduce somebody to the Demoscene. Sounds
yeah,
like.
You can really prove that you're elite by putting that on your coffee table. Other people have like baseball encyclopedias or like life picture photojournalism collections. And we can have the Demoscene book sitting there.
Yes. Rarer was unfortunately unable to be on this episode of The Arts. We were hoping to have him as a guest on our show. Although this is already a rather full show, we do hope to have him on a future episode to speak with him more about it. If you're looking for more information on this Demoscene book, The Art of Real Time, you can refer to their website, www.evenlakestudios.com/books.
Yeah, everyone should go ahead and order that. That's really something good to support, I think.
So yeah.
It says click here to find your local dealer, and it was... I believe, isn't this published in...
Finland.
Yes.
And they're adding more distributors all the time, so they're going to be, very soon, they're going to be offering some distributors in the United States, but there are already several international resellers of this book. As far as demo parties go, there's going to be Scene Event taking place. Scene Event 2004 is going to be taking place this July 21st through 24th in Denmark. It's the longest running party still active in Denmark.
Awesome.
And, yeah, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the name of the town.
Korshojalin or something?
Good job, dude. I'll let you do that.
Yeah, we're such ignorant Americans.
But it's a small town near Randers, it says, and their website is se2k.dk. So, yeah, there's been a lot of noise recently about Scene Event, so it sounds like it's a pretty popular party. And, of course, Pilgrimage 2004 tickets recently went on sale, so you can pick those up at pilgrimage.scene.org. Pilgrimage is the only demo party that takes place in the United States and all of North America. Tickets for that can be purchased at pilgrimage.scene.org/2004/register.html. There have been a lot of new art packs released recently. Two of the sleeping giants of the scene have recently come out of hibernation. Crow has released their unique art disc, Crow 2K4.
Yeah.
Have you checked that out?
Yeah, actually I have. I was on dial-up when they actually dropped it, so I had to get their low, I guess the low-res version or
well,
whatever.
Well, yeah, you missed out on, I think really they just cut out the music in the
basically, smaller
version.
But what kind of sucks about it is with... It might just be my computer, but I doubt it. But the disc mag, the way it actually displays the ASCII is horrendous. Like, it's you can't read any of the text or anything, but luckily you can actually go into the disc mag folder and get the ASCII directly and open it in whatever viewer you choose.
I didn't have that problem.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's the constant perpetual problem that you have with your POS video card.
Really?
Yeah.
It's having problems with text, huh?
I can't attest to the small version that you downloaded, but the version that I picked up with the full-blown music and everything included, it worked great.
You could actually read, like, the small text and stuff?
Yeah, it was no problem.
Oh, right on. Well, then, I mean, either way. But, yeah, it was a pretty decent pack from Crow. A lot of good stuff from Alien and Molo, of course. Overall, pretty good, mostly block ASCII pack.
SAC has also come back with their release of Art Pack number 30, and a slew of additional text mode packs have been coming out from groups like TNT, Dan One, Penis, Sense, and there have been several high-res publications as well from Firebrush. They released their 17th Art Pack, Depth Core 12, Twisted Realms, both releasing their 12th packs as well. And rather than read off a dozen different URLs, you can find all of these new releases and links to them at scene.downmix.com, just to make it easy for everybody.
There's just not enough time to cover them all right now. Maybe in a future episode we should really cover the high-res scene a little bit more, like you were saying.
That is something that I do intend to do sooner rather than later. We've been slightly neglecting, I feel, the high-res scene, so definitely look forward to some coverage on that very soon. Speaking of URLs, I heard that Kitchen Sink did something about their URL.
Halifax, who just recently joined Remorse. I have to plug Remorse, of course. His Kitchen Sink eMag updated his URL to ksmag.tk. So that makes it a lot easier than the old URL. And last I spoke to him, the estimated time of arrival on the actual disk, well, it's a disk mag, so it was going to be like a week to 2 weeks. You know how that goes. It might take a little bit longer.
Yep, it happens.
We'll see, yeah.
Okay, this was totally unexpected, but I'm just receiving an SMS message right now from Jason Scott on my cell phone.
Oh my God, breaking news.
He's at Hope right now. He just gave a speech at Hope this morning, so I figured maybe we could give him a call.
Okay, cool.
Please hold.
Okay, we're now speaking with the man who cannot be saved, Jason Scott of TextFiles.com, live at the Fifth Hope in Manhattan, New York. Hello, welcome.
Hello there. Hey there.
We were just mentioning before adding you in that you had given a speech today at Hope sometime earlier this morning.
Yes, I gave a speech on saving digital history. My primary motivation for speaking at most of these conventions is because they let you in free. So initially that was my idea, you know, when I started out going at DEF CON and others was, wow, I can get in free and you let me talk in front of people for free? Well, I'll do that. But very quickly I found out what they've been doing is they've been forcing me to kind of reevaluate what I do with my life or different projects or ideas that I have such that they make sense to an audience. And that's a really good, you know, kind of timeout exercise. You know, it's one thing to say, oh yeah, I collect stuff. But when you got to explain to people for about 40 minutes about, you know, well, why do you collect stuff and why do you do it and what's wrong with it and what's good with it and so on, and the audience seems to enjoy it, it's a really good time.
I understand that Hope itself has quite an impressive list of speakers lined up this year, including Steve Wozniak, Captain Crunch, Kevin Mitnick, and, of course, yourself. Have you had a chance to listen? Has the keynote speech already been delivered? Have you had a chance to visit any of these other speeches? And what other things are happening at Hope this year?
One interesting thing about cons, especially the bigger cons, Hope and DEF CON, is that usually you're not, you know, a lot of people go to them and don't go to a lot of the talks. They say they are, but they'll go to, like, the one about the one subject they really like, and then, boom, you don't see them the rest of the time. They're drinking with their buddies. They're having a good old time. I suspect this isn't really something confined to hacker cons either. But at something like Hope, Corley, Emmanuel Goldstein, the editor of 2600 and his staff, who are large in this event, really put together an interesting mix. You know, whereas one talk might say something about a new tool, a new computer exploit, or something else, you'll also get, for instance, I sat in on a great talk about hacktivism, where they brought in one of the leaders of Human Rights in China, who are this non-government organization trying to get people aware of what's going on over in China. Now, I don't usually listen to this kind of stuff, but they couched it with all these other interesting folks and the Cult of the Dead Cow, such that when this person took the stage, suddenly you're being given a lot of very real, very serious information. And I think that's kind of the real skill with 2600 and how they put up Hope, because it's half politics, half tech, and it works. So I got to sit in on that one. I sat in on one by Java Man. One of the things that's interesting is that you go around and there's people there who you've heard about, right? Kevin Mitnick or Fiber Optic or, you know, Wozniak, Biafra, and you see them and you walk over and you say hello and you talk to them for a little bit. And, I'm not usually the kind of gush, but, you know, it was really great to shake Kevin Mitnick's hand and just say, hey, thanks for living through, you know, all those years and coming out and talking about it. And, he gave a speech. Mr. Mitnick gave a speech on Friday. Stephen Wozniak gave a speech on Saturday. And just finishing up now, Jello Biafra is giving a speech. So there's actually three keynotes, quite a blend right there. You come away from these talks really educated, and I think that's something that's really interesting about this, because you got guys from all over the country, all over the world, giving speeches one after another on these tracks. They started giving speeches at 11 o'clock in the morning on Friday. They're going to finish up at 6 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, which is today. There's a lot of information being passed, and they're recording it all, and they're immediately going to be giving it away.
Excellent. I saw from looking at the list of people who are going to be speaking there that Stank Dog, the primary host of BINREV, or Binary Revolution, the underground internet radio talk show, was listed there.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I've really been pleased with, now that I've been listening to a lot more hacker radio, is how you have a real sense for when upcoming events are and the little cast of characters that is slowly built up over time. So you start to know about Stank Dog and N-Theory and Dual Parallel and Slip Mode. I mean, you get these guys, you start to know them, right? And I found out that they were going to be speaking here on various terms. I sat in a little bit on Stank Dog's talk on AS400s. Basically, he was up there with a video of him using an AS400 and demonstrating to people, you know, what he was learning and what he was doing with it and what you could find from it that was interesting. And he was, you know, pushing it along very well. One of the side effects of running these hacker radio programs is these guys have become really good speakers. Now, later at the event, there was actually a hacker radio talk given, and that had Stank Dog of Binary Revolution. It had Dual Parallel of Radio Freak America and the upcoming Hacker Public Radio, and it had Flip Mode of In the Now. And these three guys went up there and basically said, what's hacker radio? What's it about? Here do you want to go? You know, how do you do it? It's so easy. And it once again showed me why I like Radio Freak America so much, because once, you know, Dual Parallel came up there and started talking, oh, man, he was just, you have to do this. This is the most important thing. And, you know, yeah. Really inspiring guy. Got to meet them all, and then found out to my surprise. It turns out Radio Freak America missed an episode. Out of their 99 episodes of this hacker show recorded before it went off the air, they missed episode 76 because of some technical issues. So after the talk, they announced they were going downstairs to the hacker area, and they were going to set up a microphone, and they were going to record episode 76.
No way.
So they're recording episode 76, and they did it last night. I assume it had lots of great, strange guests and unusual people. You know, the thing that may not be obvious is most of these guys aren't in the same physical location. You know, Flip Mode does not live anywhere near Dual Parallel, and Dual Parallel doesn't live anywhere near Stank Dog. I mean, these guys don't live within the same state area, nothing. So the fact that they were all in one place and doing that, I think it's going to be a really good episode, you know? It's going to have some strange sounds, I'll tell you that, but it's going to be a really good one. And in fact, on Saturday night, Emmanuel Goldstein recorded a live two-hour episode of Off the Hook right from the front stage of the main talking area of Hope. You know, basically, it was going live out to New York City right there, and you could go stand out in the audience and watch as he was talking with Bernie S. and Cheshire Catalyst and a whole other range of people that he brought on and off over the 2 hours. And, you know, he's a professional now. He doesn't have any, there's no pause when he talks.
Yeah.
And so it was great. I mean, it's great to be at the events as they're happening. Hope is definitely my favorite hacker conference. I'll probably get in trouble in some circles for saying that, but they really are, because you walk around, it's not a one-man operation. When I go to do my talk, there was a volunteer working the sound, there's a volunteer working a Canon XL1 up on a platform to record you, there is a volunteer being a stage manager, and sometimes there's another volunteer running the microphones so that you can, you know, like bringing one up to around the audience so that they can ask you questions. You really feel it, and you know these people, when they're recording the video, you move around, they move around, you know? I just watched while Stank Dog was doing his presentation, and he pointed to a microphone, and the microphone starts working, and somebody's using it. I mean, these are not people asleep at the switch. These are people doing their job, and that's really impressive.
We were just speaking with Abyss earlier in the show today. And they have attendance, you know, in order of 5,000 or so. And just their organizational staff alone, if you include the security staff, is between 220 and 230 people.
Yeah, you get that sense when you have, like, that amount of talent going on, people who really care about the event. They're not in it to make their salary. They're not in it to check in and check out. They're in it because they know how important it is to be able to handle problems. And, I mean, I watched as they had something, some code word went by on the radio. Somebody said something like, you know, like, oh, the kid with, you know, the kid with the window is back or something. And I watched five people come running out of different areas and get up and they go, wait, no, he's actually not going to come in. And then everyone kind of quietly went back to what they were doing because they want things to be, you know, safe. They want things to be good. And they want people to have a good time and learn things. And, I mean, there's been no disruptions. There's been no weirdness. It's been solid. And the partying, I have to put a plug in for the Hacker Halfway House, hackerhalfwayhouse.org. These people, man, when they were told by the staff to stop bringing in the cases of alcohol, and then they found other ways to bring it in, and they had a party in one room that was unstoppable, and when they were kicked out of that, had already planned to have it at their off-site location for the next night. You know, in other words, these guys, and I mean, the alcohol flowed and fun flowed, and I've got people who are still coming up to me saying, I went to that party last night. Wasn't that great? No money, no money changing hands. They gave out little quiet cards saying, come here to this room, or here's a map to our place. You know, little business cards you can stick away. That's really doing something for people.
So this is like the underground hacker rave.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much it's this really neat hacker space. And they spoke as part of Hacker Spaces, which was a talk where they kind of went over like what it's like when you want to get five or six people together and put up a house or put up a warehouse area and have everyone packing and meeting there. So it was an interesting talk in itself on, I believe it was on Friday, and man, they really drank a lot right on stage.
Hope aside, you've also been working on a support site for Farbrosch's Werkzeug 1 tool, their demo tool, which is available at bitchtothecurb.com/workthings.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that site and what inspired you to create that?
Certainly. I've always been kind of impressed with Farbrosch for the past couple of years. I mean, it was one of these things. It's a feeling that I've had before, places like ScoopX or Melon, a little cut above. They make demos like anyone else makes demos, but you just know, you know this is the one you better download, you better turn down the radio in the back, maybe you want to close the door, turn off the lights, and just take it in. For a long time, I used to play people Poem to a Horse, and they would just sit down and go, oh my goodness, and I'd go, and it's 64K, and people would be, wow, you're kidding me. And same thing with other productions they would do that were 64K. And then they came out with the popular demo, and again, it was wonderful. And then to hear that they were going to take it and release the tool that they used to make it, I had known about the tool because I had seen a television show that they were on, and they mentioned, oh, we use a tool, and I glanced at the product back then and thought, wow, you know, how neat they have that. Good for them. That explains why it's so good. But when I found that they were just going to give it away, I was completely stunned. As soon as that happened, I downloaded it and started playing with it. So one of the things that I did was immediately download it and play with it. But like any tool, I realized that all of my years of using things like 3D Studio, using ray tracing programs, it was always that initial learning curve. You hit that wall. You hit that point where you're like, oh, okay, I get it. You make a cube. You make it bumpy. You make it extruded a little. You twist. Oh, goddamn, how do I do the cameras? And you stop. And I realized that this tool, you know, even though it's being done by a demo group and used to make demos, it could be so much more. Because basically, it eases up the entire process of using DirectX on a Windows box. It basically turns it into a kind of a meta-programming language. You end up being able to make these things, and it's great that it compresses them down to 64K, and that might be of use, but that's not the only cool thing about it. It's just that how easily, you know, in real time, you're seeing what's going on. This was just an inspiring thing, but I so much wanted to use it, and I thought, you know, maybe it's time just someone ought to put a site up with these guys, list what they do, list what they're about, and instead of it being trapped on some scene bulletin board, you know, because that's a small group of people relative to the, you know, users of computers, let's put it somewhere straight. Now, there's some wisdom or lack of wisdom in putting it on bitchtothecurb.com, but bitchtothecurb.com just happened to be one of my works things, and basically called it that, because I thought that was an interesting word. I mean, most German words are simply a bunch of words put together.
Right.
So as a result, even though we go like, what you're really saying is you're saying bird song, they'll be like, no, you're not. It's not really bird song. I'm saying tweet. You know, it's not really the same thing, but I think it's cute. The name word, work things is such an interesting phrase. And so initially I put that up, and then some kid wrote, where's the wiki? And I thought, the wiki? Oh, God, I'm going to make a wiki. And I went and researched it and taught myself, you know, how you deal with wikis. And so if for nothing else, this has been a great practice because wikis can be really great things. And to my great surprise, within a short time, the Faulbrush guys found it.
Right, the Faulbrush members were actually contributing to the wiki that you had set up.
Yep, it's obvious that they're waiting in the wings a little bit. They want to see, you know, if it flies or falls. But, yeah, they've contributed enough to, like, say, you know, I put up the membership list because it's not just about, I mean, it's partially a fan site, really. I mean, it's partially product support, but it's also, what's more, tell me more about Faulbrush. I mean, these guys all work together. There's a ton of them. I mean, if you start to correlate them, some of them are working on projects far outside of the demo scene that are also really well done and really interesting, but they don't really have a way to, like, say on Faulbrush, oh, by the way, one of us just completes work on a new game. Over time, it's expanding a little bit, and it wasn't something I intended to do before the product came out, before, you know, where it came out. I mean, I basically got inspired to do it, did it overnight, and then just stuck with it. Through the upstream of angry scene messages about it, letting people know about it. I mean, that's cute. I love those little battles, right? Oh, God, it's going to ruin demos. Oh, my God, it's going to do this. This lays down the gauntlet for people because what it says to people is, oh, little twirly things going back and forth, you know, using DirectX, not only can it be done, here's a thing that does it. What else you got in the bag?
Exactly. I think so, it could easily push for more creativity in the scene by simplifying the process so that a coder is not necessarily required to create such a production. I think it kind of advances or is going to push on people to advance their skills aesthetically.
I'm completely of the opinion that's what it's about. I mean, you know, keep in mind, like I said, I think of this thing as a tool that expands far beyond demo scenes, art scenes, and the back and forth that happened there. I mean, for all of keeping track of different scenes, they're a relatively tiny group of people. I mean, it's talking about maybe, you know, at various times, a couple hundred people who are hardcore into it, and maybe a couple thousand like me who are tourists who kind of keep an eye on it and do stuff. But, you know, there are millions of computer users, and if you start seeing people start making slightly more beautiful interfaces or logos or things because of this, I think it's a better world. Now, one thing that is obvious, which comes right off, you see, when people talk about the abstract of, well, we could always make a program that does it, and look what would happen, this would happen, this would happen. Faulbrush was kind enough to include the popular demo source file into this program set, so you can load it in and see exactly how they did it. And the answer is, they simply shifted the workload. You know, it's no longer like, well, where do we code, how do we code in things quickest to do this? It's more like, how do you make something look like it glows?
Mm-hmm.
How do you make it look like it's going to, you know, how do you make given these sets of tools, how do you make a pulsating disco floor that you zoom around so that it looks like something from the 70s, but not, you know? They just shifted it over to the aesthetic and the procedural aspects. And there's still a ton of work. It's obvious that there must be, oh, you know, 3-4 months of hard work in the tool to do it. So it's not a case of, like, press button 1 and it spins, press button 2 and it's of someone's name. I mean, there's a lot you have to do. It's just in a different place.
Right.
And that second place is where there's a lot more people. Now, the demo scene... Yeah, I mean, you know, demo scenes are built mostly off of the energy and conflict and one-upmanship of young people. So naturally, they would look at anything like this as cheating. That's great. If you want to tell people, you know, I mean, I remember being in NAID, and I remember, you know, people, they had a base machine for people to put stuff in, and people would put it in, and sometimes it would come up with an error. The audience would go, boo, and that'd be the end of it. They are out of the race.
you couldn't even make your program run there.
Right.
Or they'd see it slow down for a little bit and do something and chug. And people would be like, boo, you didn't optimize. You know? The visceral reaction. You know. You say immediately. Now, look, that's not dismissing if you guys did a lot of work. It's just they didn't follow the rules. They took too long. They did this. They did that. And, you know, with this kind of stuff, as soon as people see the work's a progress bar, they're going to go, boo. Because they're going to go, okay, you didn't do this, you didn't do this, innately because of that, regardless of the amount of work they did. But there's a whole other group of us who are not pretending that we're demo coders, who are going to see the product's progress bar coming up, and we're going to go, what's up next?
Exactly.
And that's, I think, I don't foresee this being a major problem. No real demo group ever uses another group's tools for very long. Why would they? I mean, especially if they don't have the source. Maybe they'll make fun of it. They'll make fun of the tool. They'll do something that says, oh, yeah, looks like we're doing it in this tool, aren't we? And then they would do something that shows, obviously, they didn't. That's the challenge. That's all part of it, as far as I'm concerned.
I've been hearing a good number of rumors that several people are going to be making Wurzug productions and releasing them at Pilgrimage.
I haven't heard anything like that coming to me. I'm not really in a place where I think people, like, give me input like that, although I would like to set up something on the wiki where people can upload their productions and go, this is what I did, this is what I did. So, to me, it's a tempest in a teapot, but as you have said to me on many cases, this scene loves tempests.
It's very true. Well, that's all I have for this show. Well, Jason, thank you very much for being a part of the show.
I look forward to it every time it comes out, believe me.
Thank you for giving us the insight to Hope this year. Sounds like everybody's having a blast.
Oh, yeah.
And I wish you well with your future projects. And, of course, are there any sites that you'd like to have people visit?
You know, as far as I'm concerned, people should just go ahead and go over to 2600.com, go look at all the sites around there. They should just look over at perhaps, you know, textfiles.com, I guess, if they haven't really already seen it. And basically look at DEF CON and look at Pilgrimage and so on. I mean, you know, it's funny. All these sites deal with the same things, the same people, the same let's have fun with computers and do things and let's go with it. And that's all part of what the arts is about, you know, keeping an eye on what's going on out there, because you'd be surprised where arts show up next. So, you know, really, it's a big, wide internet, and there's a lot of fun in it.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jason. It's been good speaking with you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. So that was Jason Scott providing us with insight at the Hope Hacker Conference.
He's always awesome.
In other news, Mozilla has released 1.7.1 of their browser suite very recently. Last week, actually, in fact. There's several great things about Mozilla.
Number one is that it's not IE.
Right. It's faster than IE. You don't have the pop-ups. If you use the POP3 client for email, it has a pretty sophisticated Bayesian filter so you don't get spam. You know, it's not vulnerable to the browser hijackings. Version 1.7.1 was recently released to address a bug in the shell external protocol handler code, which could have been used to exploit the browser and run malicious code on it. I mean, these people are highly responsive when something is posted that could be a possible exploit. I highly recommend checking it out to anybody who's still using IE because they don't know what they're missing.
Check it out to have, like, another option, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, Opera doesn't really load some pages, especially stuff with, like, JavaScript. It doesn't handle it all that well, so.
That's really all I have for current events.
This was one hell of a show.
Okay, well, that's a wrap. I'm going to let Spinsane get his Gatorade and full body massage. Taking us out of this episode is a unique Kebby versus Purple Motion remix of the Second Reality soundtrack Unreal 2, which you also heard at the beginning of the show. Thanks for listening.
All right, peace.
The Arts. The Arts.